scared about going back to school. I don't want to get sick, and I don't want to get you and Dad sick.
This week on Disaffected, come with us to the Twilight Zone as Los Angeles schools release a cartoon COVID video that has everything. Paranoid parents, terrorized children, and QR codes to enter the schoolhouse. Then we'll visit the first church of Mascatarianism. Authoritarian governments have issued unconstitutional orders, closing businesses and banning social activities, even in private homes. All the while, docile citizens say, "Thank you, sir. May I have another?" And finally, we've got the numbers. You might be shocked to see the actual death rate. All this and more this week on Disaffected.
Our scientists tell us there are three things we must do to stay safe. Wear masks, make sure we social distance, and wash our hands.
Welcome to Disaffected. I'm Joshua Slocum. This is the podcast where we talk about Cluster B personality disorders and abuse dynamics, the kinds of things that you usually see in situations of child abuse or you may be familiar with in domestic violence that have spilled out into the public and are structuring the way we talk to each other. They're structuring our politics. They're structuring our media. The thesis of this show is that we are living in a Cluster B world. We are living in a world where the personality traits and the abuse tactics of borderlines, narcissists, histrionics, and sociopaths are being applauded as authentic and validated, and they have infected the mainstream left. The woke left particularly, but the silent mainstream that's going along with them has been co-opted by these abusive people and turned into flying monkeys. So I want to do a little housekeeping. I have a correction to make from last week's show. I've realized that sitting in front of a microphone and just talking extemporaneously means that sometimes ridiculous things will fly out of your mouth that are contradictory to things you actually know. So last week I said there was one senator from every U.S. state. Obviously, that's not true. There are two senators. I knew that, but somehow my mouth didn't. So there you go. I also want to plug alternative platforms. This show, we're going to talk about COVID and what I think of as the Church of Mascatarianism. And this is exactly the kind of thing that runs counter to the narrative and that mainstream platforms do not like. So if you are listening to us or watching us on YouTube, I ask you to please subscribe to at least one alternative platform, because I suspect that, and it might be this episode, YouTube is going to pull this show. This show is not going to have a long run on YouTube. Many other people who are far more well-known than I am have had their entire YouTube history wiped. There is no appeal and no recourse. So check us out on Rumble. Check us out on iTunes, Spotify. Hit the subscribe button and also hit the notification button so that when a new episode comes out, you get alerted and you'll be able to hear us. And I'm also happy to say that we have a Patreon account up now. Folks, all this costs money. This is incredibly cheap. You can have this for free. This stuff, however, costs money. If you want this content to continue, we would really, really appreciate financial support. You can find us on Patreon. Go to patreon.com/disaffected. That's patreon.com/disaffected, spelled DISAFFECTED. I want to show you something incredibly creepy. The whole tone of the show is kind of creepy. And this episode is definitely creepy. I'm going to play a video for you that the Los Angeles Public School District commissioned in partnership with Microsoft. You know how people have talked about how silly it is, all these people talking about, oh, they're going to microchip us, or oh, they're going to give us barcodes, or they're going to track us. Oh, that's just paranoid. That's just a conspiracy theory. Is it?
There's never been anything like this virus in our lifetime. Often, it's hard to see the effects it's having on our children. Has this conversation taken place in your home?
Mom, I'm scared about going back to school. I don't want to get sick, and I don't want to get you and Dad sick.
Our scientists tell us there are three things we must do to stay safe. Wear masks, make sure we social distance, and wash our hands. And now, your school, with the help of Microsoft Corporation, has created another. Introducing Daily Pass, your exclusive ticket for safely going back to school. Each week, you can schedule your free on-campus COVID test. The results are displayed in your Daily Pass. And if you choose to take your test off campus, you can post the results in your Daily Pass. And the moment vaccinations are available, you'll simply be able to schedule yours through your Daily Pass. But the real magic is your daily health check. Just answer a few simple health questions every day, and like magic, your entrance ticket appears.
Welcome back.
Welcome to school.
So, how did it go?
Dad, I have to admit, I was scared at first, but then I felt so safe. It was so good to be back. Thanks for keeping me safe. I love you so much.
Thank you for being the caring family. We're working together with all in the school community to bring children back to school as safely as possible. We're looking forward to seeing their smiling faces back in school where they belong. Thank you.
Wait for the list of partners. Are you sufficiently creeped out? For those of you who are listening and not seeing the video, this was done in a cartoon format, a crude cartoon format, not a lot of animation. I mean, even less animation than you'd see in South Park, which, you know, started out as actual cardboard cutouts that move around. It's sort of, you know what it looks like? If the Microsoft, if the Comic Sans font were a cartoon, this was done in Comic Sans. A couple of things about this. It's incredibly creepy, and it's so creepy that I don't understand why it didn't occur to either the Los Angeles Unified School District or to the producers of this video that it really straddles the line. It's like something out of a movie. It's like out of a sci-fi dystopia. And just notice a couple of the techniques they use. These are techniques of authoritarians, and authoritarians are cluster Bs, okay? These are people who have an insatiable need for power and they want to control you. But they want to disguise themselves. They want to wear a mask, and they want to present this to you as if it were all snuggles and bunnies. Just the fact that they use that dipshitty melody, that's important. The reason why you remember commercial jingles from your childhood is because the brain associates thoughts with musical melody. So I remember, for example, a phrase from Pillsbury Crescent Rolls. Loving from the oven, beep, beep. I mean, why do I remember that? There's no reason to remember that, but the melody got me. So they're using melody, and they're using what I call mommy tone. You know, they're speaking to you in a really soft, caring female voice, and it's magic and ring. Creepy, creepy, creepy. Come back for the next segment. It only gets worse. Hey, listeners, guess what? We're on Patreon now. Take a look. Please share, please subscribe, and please support us. Bringing this content to you is something we enjoy doing, but it's something that takes money. And if you care about the kind of look that we take at the world, if you care about the fact that we bring you this news and we analyze it through the lens of the abuse dynamics and the authoritarianism that seems to be taking over our world, please help continue to make this happen. Thank you.
don't want any coffee. I just want my children.
Well, they're not here. Dave's working late, so I shooed my boys off with friends so I could give myself a chance to do some real cleaning. Whoever told you Kim and Amy were here?
No one. But the night they changed you, I kept your kids. It just seemed logical to me.
Changed me? What's that mean?
I don't know. I really don't. Bobby, stop it! Look at me! Say I'm right. You are different. Your figure's different. Your face, what you talk about, all of this is different.
Yes, this. It's wonderful.
Why don't you change your mind and have a cup?
What does archaic mean?
Archaic?
Yes.
I don't know.
Think! You used to know when we went to Marie Axel's and she was ironing. She didn't know, but you did.
Did I? Well, I forgot. How do you want it?
It wasn't on the word list, was it?
This is a new blend and very mild. You take cream.
Look, I bleed.
Oh, that's right. You take it black.
I cut myself. I bleed. Do you bleed?
Why, look at your hand.
No, you look.
Johanna. I thought we were friends. I was just going to give you coffee. How could you do a thing like that? I thought we were friends.
That's what the world has felt like to me for almost a year. Some of you will know that. It's a clip from the 1975 dystopian sci-fi horror film, The Stepford Wives. There's something about 1970s horror that really captures the mood that I felt in this country since we went into this pandemic. I remember in March of last year, I was getting ready to organize an in-person conference at a hotel and conference center for my job, and it was coming up on the deadline to sign the final contract, and all this news was coming up about major companies and academic institutions canceling their in-person events, and I said, this seems like an overreaction, but I don't think anybody's going to get on a plane, and I think that if we hold this event, that we're going to lose money. So I did cancel the contract and we went to a virtual conference. And I had no idea at that point what it was going to turn into. It's been almost a year now since the start of, well, I'm just going to say it. The pandemic, I have a problem with it. I know the virus is real. I know that COVID-19 is real. I'm not a denier. I know that people have died. But I do not believe that in reality, aside from the branding and the packaging and the atmospherics that have gone into making this seem like a crisis, I don't believe that this pandemic is a natural occurrence. No, I don't mean that I think that this virus was cooked up in a lab. I don't know that. I'm not going to speculate. Someday, we'll figure out definitively whether this was a lab leak, whether it was a natural occurrence. It doesn't really matter. What matters is what our governments have done to us in that year's time. And the Stepford Wives That's worth, that whole movie is worth watching. Don't watch the remake first, please. The one that came out in the 2000s with Nicole Kidman and Bette Midler and Faith Hill. That's one of the things that I really dislike about modern remakes. And it must be my generation. It must be the Gen X people doing this. So many things that were really profoundly creepy and disturbing pieces of cinema have been rewritten into comedies. There was nothing funny about this. It's a feminist commentary. Actually, The Stepford Wives was written by Ira Levin, who also wrote it was a novel first. He also wrote the novel Rosemary's Baby, which, of course, was turned into a famous film with Mia Farrow, directed by Roman Polanski in 1969, one of the best horror films. But the 70s in American cinema was, in my view, the golden age of science fiction and horror. So the atmosphere in this movie reminds me of what it felt like to go into the grocery store in the beginning of the pandemic and suddenly see brand new set dressing, suddenly hear brand new sound effects. You saw the arrows being placed on the floor of grocery stores, making the aisles one way. And you heard the announcements over the public address system. And they use a way of speaking that I call mommy tone. You know, like movie tone news. Mommy tone news. You all know what mommy tone is. Do you ever listen to NPR? All the female newsreaders and presenters on shows like All Things Considered in the Afternoon or Morning Edition speak in mommy tone. It didn't used to be that way. Remember Linda Wertheimer used to be the host of All Things Considered, or somebody like Susan Stamberg, the legal correspondent who's covered the Supreme Court for decades. Strong, confident, straightforward tone of voice. Not now. Over the years, especially over the past 10 years, but it's been going on for at least 15 years, I used to be a daily NPR listener, and I can't stand it now. I turn it on the radio in my car, and I immediately shut it off. I actually did an experiment a couple of weeks ago where I turned on the radio in my car at various times of day, tuned to NPR, and I did it 7 times in a row. So at various times a day, it was either the top of the hour news briefs, or it was a talk show or something like that. Every single time during that 7 times I turned it on, the story was about race. Every single story, every single show, personal or political context was about race. And it's delivered to you in mommy tone. And this is when the female newsreaders and presenters really try to express empathy to you. You know, they want to make sure that you know that they really understand you. They're not so much a newsreader as they are your mommy or your kindergarten teacher. It drives me up the wall. It's exactly like that old Saturday Night Live skit called The Delicious Dish, where they parodied that vocal affectation. But I was hearing mommy tone in the supermarket, so I walk into the Price Chopper, which is a grocery store chain here in the Northeast, and I hear, this is not actually a quote, but it's a pretty close paraphrase. I had to sort of remember this. It sounds like this. In these difficult times, Price Chopper cares about your safety and the safety of our associates. Please practice safe social distancing at all times and note the one-way directional markers that will guide you safely through the aisles. This is where we're at. And this is where we've been at for a year. Guide you safely through the aisles. I know that you're listening from many different parts of the U.S. and from outside the U.S. I don't know what it's like where you are. I live in Vermont, the socialist state of Vermont. And I've heard from people who live in Texas that the atmosphere is very different. There's a podcast I listen to where one of the hosts is a Texan, and she's been telling people to take their masks off. She says, I don't wear them at the big box stores anymore. I'm simply not going to comply with this. That's not an option here in Vermont. It's legally enforced, and it's socially enforced, and it is creepy. It's Stepford Wives. Another one that's a good fit is the 1970s version of Invasion of the Body Snatchers. And you see that picture there? Donald Sutherland, near the end of the movie, when the protagonists are trying to escape so that they will not be assimilated themselves. And they're trying very hard not to be detected because almost everyone around them has been body snatched. And there's that very famous shot. So I'll describe it for those of you listening and can't see the video. They're walking down the street, and Donald Sutherland's character notices them and stops and points directly at them and opens his mouth, and this dissonant scream comes out. That's what it feels like in Vermont. 2 weeks ago, I was walking down Pearl Street, which is in downtown Vermont, and I was going to pick up an order from a restaurant, but I had to park a block away. And it was a Sunday, so most of the shops were closed, and I just did some window shopping. There was a furniture gallery and an antique store, and homosexuals love antiques, so you know I had to stop and window shop. And I was just looking through the windows and casually walking down the street. I'm on the street. I'm on the open street in front of a bunch of buildings. People are walking on this side, walking on that side, and I see a gentleman walking up to me. This was my Invasion of the Body Snatchers moment. He's coming towards me. He's elderly. He looks like he might be about 75 years old. Big, tall man, probably 6'2", carrying a canvas tote with his groceries. And he's looking at me as he's walking up to me with his mask on. And I don't know why he keeps looking at me. And as soon as he goes by me, so that his back is to me and he's walking, he shouts very loudly so that everyone on the street could hear, "Where's your mask?" Sorry if I blew your eardrums out. I don't take kindly to being told what to do by people who don't have the right to tell me what to do. And I take even less kindly to people who take an opportunity to do social shaming so that they can get applause. And this guy was shaming me. I am no danger to this gentleman. Nobody walking out on the street in the middle of winter is any danger to anyone else from the point of view of disease transmission. The science. You know, the science. You notice that? It's not listen to science, it's listen to the science. It takes the definite article. And that's how you know it's become an article of faith. It's got a special little construction. The science doesn't support the use of masks outdoors, never has. But this is Vermont. This may seem like a small anecdote, but it's not. It's indicative of a social sickness. And it strikes fear into me. I'm scared now. I'm scared of other people. You want to know what I did? Well, as soon as he said that, I turned around and I said, "Why don't you mind your own fucking business, sir?" You can react however you want if somebody pulls this crap on you, but I would ask you to react. If somebody pulls a social shaming on you, if somebody points at you on the street and tries to make you an example, tries to treat you like somebody who should be put in the stocks in the middle of the town square, somebody who treats you like a witch, fight back. Fight back. Shame them. Make them the center of attention for everybody else on the street. Send a social signal. Push back. Do not accept this. Don't be the bigger person and walk away. There are times when it is tactically wise and politically savvy to keep your counsel. And there are times when you need to demonstrate pushback in front of other people. And those times come when somebody pulls nonsense like this. Because every time you let that happen and you walk away and you don't say anything, you've just strengthened that. You just made the ratchet click around your handcuffs one notch tighter. Don't put up with it. Christmas time, last year, just a couple of months ago, I hadn't seen my sister and her family for more than a year. I usually go down a couple times a year. My sister comes up at least once a year to see me in Vermont, but we hadn't seen each other for over a year, and we missed each other. I miss a lot of people. I miss a lot of socializing. I mean, I'm a person who likes to spend a lot of time by myself, but this has gotten to me. And my sister is immune compromised and has some chronic health conditions. Well, a lot of them, actually. And we talked for many months about when we could see each other and when she would feel safe, because I do actually care, right? I'm not a sociopath. If there's a chance that I could bring an illness that would seriously sicken or kill my sister, I'm not going to do it. But we talked it over and we talked it over and we looked at how many cases there were in her area and my area and how likely it was that one of us would get it. And we came to the conclusion finally that family mattered. Seeing family matters. And especially because my sister is not likely to live to old age. Some of the conditions she has are probably going to kill her before she becomes an old lady. And we wanted to see each other, so I decided that I would go, and she wanted me to go. I left that decision with her. She was the vulnerable person. I will concede to her needs. But she asked me to take a COVID test before I came. So I did. And I went to an urgent care clinic a block away from my office, and I got the nasal swab test. It wasn't nearly as bad as I thought it was going to be. Maybe they don't go back as far as they did. In the initial wave of these people, it almost felt like people were saying that their brains were getting poked. That didn't sound like a good time. It was very ticklish, but that was it. And they had you sit in the examination room for 15 minutes. This was the rapid test that would come back. And I believe, but I'm not certain, that this is the PCR test, the polymerase chain reaction, where they amplify the tiny fragments of DNA through replication processes so that the test can actually detect this stuff. And there is some scientific discussion about whether or not this is even a valid form of detecting an actual COVID infection. And I waited for 15 minutes, and then the doctor, the on-call physician, rather than the nurse who'd taken my swab, she came in and she told me that my test result was negative. And because they'd asked me when I came in why I was taking the test, I told them that I was going to be seeing a relative and that she was concerned about it. So the doctor says to me, well, of course, we're not advising people to go home for Christmas like you're going to do. But if you're going to do that, you know, you need to do this, 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 and this. And she says, now, you're going to quarantine when you come back, right? And for those of you who don't know, and I'm going to get into this when I'm done telling this anecdote, I'm going to show you what our governor has done in the state of Vermont. Governor Scott has issued a series of emergency and executive orders, which he keeps renewing on his own recognizance without the legislature doing anything at all. And he has made it the law, so to speak, that anybody who travels outside of Vermont or comes back into Vermont, anybody, not people who are infected, not people who have tested positive, not people who are symptomatic, anybody, whether they've been exposed or not, has to self-isolate and quarantine for 14 days on returning to the state. I'm not going to do it. Governor Scott, I'm not doing it, and I didn't do it. And you can't make me, and you have no legal authority to issue this order. So this doctor says, you're going to quarantine, right? And I said, I will make my own decision. That's all I said. She goes, but, you know, these are the guidelines. And I said, I realize that these are the No, it's not just the guidelines. It's the law. She got shirty with me. I didn't raise my voice. I said simply and calmly, Thank you, I understand. I'll make my own decision, just like I'm speaking to you right now. She threw a fit. And she said, I cannot believe I'm hearing this. And I said, what is it that you can't believe? We have been busting our butt in the healthcare system to keep people safe all this time. I have never had somebody walk into my office and actually admit that they're going to violate the law. I can't believe what you're saying. And this is one of those times where I was able to keep my temper. I do have a bit of a, I do have a bit of a trigger temper. And I knew that I needed to get out of there. So I put my coat on and I picked my bag up as she was, you know, staring at me like a leper. And I thought maybe I can salvage this. So before I left the room, I started to say, I'd like to tell you that those of us who are skeptical of these protocols and who are questioning this, I'm not an anti-science person. I'm not an anti-public health. She stops me. Have a nice day. Pulls open the door. Have a nice day. And I wished her, very nicely, I said, happy holidays. I hope you enjoy them. Thank you. She says. This is what the hysteria and the nonsense has done to us socially. I have always had a lot of skepticism about public health, I have to tell you. Public health is necessary, and public health has done a lot of good things for disease prevention, but it happens to attract authoritarian people disproportionately. And people in positions of public health, state medical directors and such, epidemiologists, they have, for the past year, become media stars. They have had a front-facing role in front of the public, and they have been writing, whether directly or by ventriloquizing through legislators, actual laws that govern our lives in a way that they have never had the power to do before. This has never happened in modern public health history. So not only are they getting their egos fluffed by being perceived as heroes, they're being obeyed. And they like it. Oh, my goodness, do they like it. And they don't want to give it up. That is what causes a physician to completely lose her composure and yell at me and act as if I were a brazen and unashamed typhoid Mary. And why is she so confident about this? Let me give you a rundown of what our Vermont governor has done. And I want to say this. This is going on in a lot of states, and I believe that this is utterly unconstitutional, both against state constitutions and the U.S. federal constitution. We have had our civil liberties suspended and taken away from us without due process. Our constitutional rights have been suspended. This is not my opinion. It's actually true. These restrictions on travel, these quarantine orders for going in and out of state. Well, no, let me just read you some of these. This is, okay, do you see this? These excerpts here that I'm going to quickly read you are a sample of a much longer list of executive orders that are on the governor's page in Vermont. So, starting on March 13th, 2020, Governor Scott restricted visitor access to long-term care facilities. On March 16th, the governor ordered the closure of all bars and restaurants statewide. That has since been modified. On March 20th, Governor Scott ordered the suspension of all non-essential adult elective surgery and medical surgical procedures. Also has been altered since then. March 21st, Governor Scott further restricted non-essential gatherings to 10 or less people. It should be fewer. Really? Restricted non-essential gatherings? What constitutional authority does he have to do that? On March 23rd, Governor Scott ordered telecommuting or work-from-home procedures for all businesses and nonprofit entities to the maximum extent possible. On what constitutional authority? On March 30th, Governor Scott ordered residents and non-residents coming from outside the state for any non-essential purpose to quarantine for 14 days and strongly discouraged travel to Vermont from any COVID-19 hotspots designated by the CDC. On what constitutional authority? On July 24th, 2020, Governor Scott signed an executive order requiring all Vermonters to wear a mask or cloth facial covering anytime it is not possible to maintain a physical distance of at least 6 feet with others from outside their household. On what constitutional authority? On November 13th, 2020, Governor Scott implemented temporary restrictions on social gatherings and business operations, including prohibition of private, multi-household social gatherings, limits on restaurant hours and seating, closures of bars and clubs, a pause on recreational sports, reinstitution of telework requirements, and an additional contact tracing and testing requirements. On what constitutional grounds? So starting on March 13th and going up through November 13th, again, with no permission given by the legislature, and our state legislature has done nothing to rein in this out-of-control power grab. I can understand quarantining in the classic and traditional sense. Excuse me. Told y'all, that Vermont dry air is a doozy. I do not remember a time in modern history when we quarantined the well. Do you? If you're objecting right now, if you're upset and you think that you want to write me off as one of those wacko libertarians, you know, somebody who actually believes in the Constitution and its legal authority, do you remember a time when we quarantined well people? It's never happened. This is not normal. It's not normal, it's not constitutional, and it's not scientifically based. Our governor issued an executive order making it illegal to walk out of doors to take a walk in the fresh air with anyone not in your household. Are you okay with this? And if you are, why? When I go into a restaurant, I do food delivery a few nights a week to make extra money. And I visit a number of restaurants frequently picking up orders to deliver them to customers. I walked into an Applebee's. Oh, it's got to be about 4 months ago now, when the governor signed one of his executive orders making it illegal for restaurants to seat people at a table unless they lived in the same household. Uh-huh. So there's signs up at the Applebee's, must be from same household. And they've got a sign-in sheet. So if you come in and you sit down, you've got to write out your name, your email address, and your phone number. I asked to use the bathroom one evening. Mind you, I'd been into this Applebee's about 20 times because I'm a delivery driver. And they said, if you use the bathroom, you have to fill out the contact sheet. Naturally, I wrote down false information. This isn't the level of compliance with this nuttiness is what's really killing me. People are rolling over for this. And people have gotten so used to it. People have gotten so comfortable with it. I hope that some of you listening are in places where people are much more disobedient than they are here. But this state in Vermont, it's nuts. It is absolutely nuts. I can walk down Church Street. Church Street is our big downtown street. It's a classic. It's actually quite beautiful. Vermont is beautiful. It's a Victorian picture postcard, right? This place literally looks as good as the postcards you've seen depicting Vermont. That's real. It's that pretty here. Gingerbread houses, French Second Empire Victorians, downtown with, two or three story brick buildings fronted with an Italian facade, and Church Street is paved with bricks. It's a pedestrian promenade. There aren't any cars on it. Every time I go downtown, I am the only person on Church Street not wearing a mask out of doors, rain or shine. The only person. I see mothers with 2, 3, or 4 children, all of them masked up, starting at about age 2. As soon as they're able to walk, they've got masks on them. I have seen mothers, and I see it every day, stopping their children as they walk down the street, noticing that Billy's mask came below his nose. She stops them all, gets down on her knees, hikes Billy's little mask up over his 2-year-old face, and puts it on. She won't let them walk until the mask is back on. This is scaring the shit out of me. This is what I mean when I say Stepford Wives and Invasion of the Body Snatchers. The docility, the compliance, and the obedience scares me. Let me give you a few more anecdotes before I close out this segment, because in the next one, as we close the show, I'm going to give you some of the science for you to contemplate. So I told you about the guy who yelled at me on the street. Last night, I was out doing delivery, parked in the parking lot of a Friendly's restaurant. For those of you who don't know, Friendly's is a New England Northeast chain. It's basically a chain diner. They're famous for ice cream. So it's like Denny's, but, you know, focused a lot on ice cream. And I got out of my car and I wear the mask because I realize that businesses aren't going to let me in if I don't wear it. But I take the mask off as soon as I go outside and I bring it with me in the car, and I don't put it on until I actually go into the building. Actually, yeah, I'm going to put up a graphic here. This is a photograph that I took on my cell phone in front of a restaurant last night. Notice that it says, you must have a mask on before you open the door. They're serious, too. I've seen them do it. If you open the door, forget to have your mask on, and start to put it on, they will eject you from the restaurant. They won't let you back in. This is authoritarian. What does this have to do with Cluster B? It's psychopathic. It is authoritarian to the max. Everybody around me in this state has turned into a compliant flying monkey. Pardon me. I think I do that every show. Maybe we'll make it into a thing. What do you think, Kevin? Everybody around me has become so docile and so compliant, and it reminds me that the purpose of this kind of authoritarian regime is not that it makes sense. It's not about your safety. It's not about your health. These things are nonsensical. Masks outdoors is nonsensical. You'll be ejected from a restaurant if you forget for 5 seconds to put your mask on before you actually pull the door on its hinges. That's nonsensical. The purpose of this is to disorient you. The purpose has nothing to do with COVID, nothing to do with protecting grandma, nothing to do with protecting your health. It is to destabilize your sense of reality. It is to make you question every single step you take, and to make you adhere to a catechism and a checklist of ridiculous, nonsensical behaviors. It's the same dynamic that happens, that has been discussed in books like George Orwell's 1984. The point of making you recite a falsehood is not the content of the falsehood. They don't actually care that you say these specific words. They want you to say the words, but it doesn't matter what falsehood it is. It could be 2 + 2 = 5. And you know that there's a whole thing on Twitter about that now, too. The critical race theorists are coming for math. They're calling it ethnomathematics. They're deconstructing the racism in math and the racist foregrounding and privileging of getting the right answer. Yes, they're literally saying this. 2 + 2 = 5 in some context. The purpose is to make you tell a lie in front of other people. They want you to recite the falsehood and to be seen to recite the falsehood, or in this case, to be seen to comply with the theatrics, because the point is to make you know that you are not in control. You are not your own man or woman. You belong to them. And then I see a headline the other day when President Joe Biden was asked when the country's going to get back to normal. He said, hopefully by this time next year. hopefully by this time next year? It's March of 2021. It's almost been a year. And do you remember what they said at the beginning in March of 2019? Excuse me, in March of 2020? 2 weeks to flatten the curve. 2 weeks to flatten the curve. And then everybody stopped saying it. And yet you kept masking up and you kept not talking back. And then it was when the vaccine comes, when the vaccine comes. It's not when the vaccine comes now, is it? It's maybe this time next year. Do you think this is going to stop? And if you do, why do you believe that? After you've had a year to see this progression and to see them contradict themselves and continue to extend their own emergency orders without legislative oversight, why do you believe this is going to stop? Do you know? Have you asked the question? The French fry restaurant across the street from me at my job has put up plastic sheeting. Have you ever been to one of those haunted houses where there's plastic sheeting to create tunnels and then people, you know, reach through the plastic and grab you, et cetera, et cetera? It's like that, but it's transparent. So they have one of those customer queues where it's a rope line so that everybody funnels through the same way, which is actually a great and efficient way. I wish more grocery stores would do that. There's plastic sheeting hanging between them for COVID safety. So we have transparent plastic sheeting that will keep the air from circulating freely and going out through the HVAC system. It concentrates it in this little hallway, and that's supposed to be safer. What about going to the convenience store or to the bank or to the hairdressers? Have you noticed the hanging plexiglass that's in front of everybody now? This is never going to leave, folks. That stuff is never coming down. Mark me down right now. Mark down the date of this podcast. Come back and check later. We'll see if I'm right. This is not coming down. And I knew that it was going to turn into this when last fall we have in Vermont one major highway, Interstate 89. I'm beginning to loathe the state, but there I can remember some of the things that brought me to it and the low population density, the New England charm and the rolling green mountains and the beauty of this place and the fact that we don't allow billboards on the highways. It makes this place beautiful. It's lovely here. It is absolutely gorgeous. And we have only one major highway, Highway 89. And I noticed last fall that the state put up permanent metal signs saying COVID-19 danger, traveling in or out of Vermont must quarantine. These weren't temporary signs. These were metal signs produced by a professional firm on permanent metal mounts sunk into concrete on the highway. They're all over the place. Do you think they're ever going to come down? One more story before we end the segment. This is the confluence of critical race theory, COVID hysteria, and safetyism. I was looking at a forum online for parents. It's a UK forum called Mumsnet. Mums as in moms. That's what they call moms there. Mums. Mumsnet. And it's frequented by parents, overwhelmingly women, and they have an entire section devoted to COVID-19 safety. And a woman posted on there that she was terrified. She was scared of allowing her kids to go to school. She was afraid of going to her job. She didn't have the option to telecommute, so she was wondering if she'd have to take a pay cut, if she'd have to lose her job over this. She described herself as middle class, financially sound, no outstanding debt, married with a husband who also had a job, 3 children, lived in a nice house, perfectly middle-class family, no big financial problems. She had no health problems, but she's terrified. Why is she terrified? As a black woman, I know that I'm especially vulnerable, and so I'm terrified. What do I do? From all I could tell, this woman was serious. I don't think she was making this up. This is what happens to people. This makes no sense. This woman is in none of the categories that actually make you more susceptible to major illness or death. She's not in the age category. She has, well, she's in England, so she has the NHS. She's got a job. She's married with a husband who also has a job. All the proxy indicators of good health she has going for her. She has no vulnerability. She's not an old person in a nursing home. She doesn't have an autoimmune condition. But she's heard, like all of us have, this affects people of color more intently. This affects people of color, people of color, people of color. To the point where she cannot think. She actually thinks that because of the color of her skin, that somehow she's biologically more susceptible to dying of COVID. It's not true. We're in a mess, folks. Come back for the next segment. Thanks.
Do you want to talk back to us? You're in luck. We've got a listener line. Call 202-979-2480. Once again, 202-979-2480. And remember, we do reserve the right to play voicemail messages on the air. Thanks.
Welcome back. Are you ready for the science? Because I've got the science for you. So we're going to put up a chart here. This chart is from the science journal Nature. So if anything qualifies as the science, this does. This is from an article titled Age-Specific Mortality and Immunity Patterns of SARS-CoV-2. This is from the November 2020 edition of Nature. This chart shows the infection fatality rate by sex and age group. The infection fatality rate means that we're considering people who are actually infected. So this is the rate of deaths among people who are actually infected. This is not people who got a PCR test necessarily that indicated they'd been exposed at some point. This is not just looking at the rate of deaths among the population as a whole. This is specifically only those who are actually infected, actual COVID cases, okay? This shows the death rate by age group and by sex. It might surprise you to see how few people die of this disease, especially in the younger age brackets. So I'm going to translate this into real world numbers for you because these look a little bit abstract and it's hard to get a sense of what this means in terms of an actual population. So for example, let's look at the age range of 25 to 29, for example, and you'll see as you read across this chart, under male, it says 0.017. Under female, it says 0.009. And mean, which is halfway between the two, 0.013. We know that men appear to die are twice as likely to die in the same age group as women are. This is another example of why sex matters, people. Gender identity doesn't have anything to do with this. Biological sex does. This is real. So remember, these are people who are actually infected with COVID. I translated this into a population of 10,000 people, 10,000 infected people with actual COVID infections. So I'm not saying in a town of 10,000 people, how many people age 25 will die? No. I'm saying in a population of 10,000 actually infected people, how many will die? And the number of people who are actually infected is far smaller than everybody who lives in the town, right? So this gives you a sense of how few people actually die from this. So let's just start with, we can't even start with 25 to 29 because basically out of 10,000 infected people, very few die, if any. And look here at the kids, 0 to 4, 5 to 9, 10 to 14, 15 to 19. Translating these percentages, these are expressed as percentages. So, for example, when you look at the 25 to 29 age bracket, 0.017%. This isn't 1.7%. It doesn't mean that 1.7 people out of 100 die. This is 0.017%. So it's less than 0.1%, if I'm getting my math right here, and I think I am. So let's start at the 30 to 34 age bracket. If there are 10,000 people, 30 to 34 years old, who are infected with COVID, 2.5 people will die. 35 to 39, if there are 10,000 infected people, 35 to 39, that means that, wrote the wrong number down. See, we're honest here. We check everything. Let me recalculate it very quickly. Thank goodness for the internet. 0.040 brings us to, okay, 4 people out of 10,000 infected with COVID will die in that age range. 40 to 44, 10,000 infected people, only 8 will die. 45 to 49, 10,000 infected people, only 16 will die. 50 to 54, 10,000 infected people, only 21 will die. Are you getting the picture? Yes, this is real. And yes, people do die. But until you get up to about age 55, where 21 out of 10,000 infected people will die, 32, then you get into, it really takes off in the 65 to 69 range. So if you've got a population between 65 and 69, 10,000 of them are infected, 107 will die. But this is still far lower than it seems to people, right? Does this make any sense? Do these restrictions actually make any sense? Here in the United States, most of the states are struggling to open the schools again, and the teachers' union are stopping them because they're saying that we're going to get sick and die. The children are going to give it to us. Well, first of all, the children are not going to die from this. Very, very few children have died from COVID. Again, this is Nature, folks. This is the journal Nature, the preeminent scientific publication in the world. This is the science. You get up to 70 to 74 years old. If we have a population of 10,000 people who are between 70 and 74, ...167 of them will die. But you can see that for most of these age ranges, this is far, far less than 1 in 100. It's tiny. Doesn't mean it's not real. It just means that our response to this is utterly out of proportion. It reminds me of a statistic about, I'm not going to get it right, but I'm going to get it in the ballpark. And if anybody wants to check behind me and actually correct me on this and send it in an email, us@disaffected.fm. Actually, if you have any corrections, if I get something wrong, please let me know because I always correct mistakes. us@disaffected.fm. But it reminds me of a statistic I saw the other day. They surveyed white Americans to see how many black people were killed by the police, according to white people. They were asking their perception. Every year, how many black people do you believe are killed by the police? And I think that most white people estimate it between 1,000 and 2,000. It's actually closer to 25. That's how badly out of whack our estimates of risk are. I've said in the last several episodes that I usually leave you on a hard note. I'm going to leave you with some hope this time. States are starting to reopen. I believe that people are beginning to push back against this. We need to get back to our normal lives. We need jobs. We need our businesses. We need them not to be closed. We don't need another stimulus check from the government. Joe Biden's talking about his Rescue America plan and talking about sending out another $1,400 check to people. I don't want a $1,400 check. I mean, it is my money. It's tax money. I want people to have jobs. People need to get back to work. They need to live their lives. We need to stop scaring the shit out of people and making them feel as if they are going to kill grandma. Texas is reopening at 100%. Mississippi is lifting its mask mandate. Connecticut is lifting all capacity and attendance limits at places like restaurants and movie theaters. They're keeping their mask mandate, unfortunately. And President Biden calls this Neanderthal thinking. Really?
The New York Times, naturally, is shrieking that lifting mandates on masks is going to kill people. Because this is what they're selling. They're selling you fear. They're destabilizing your sense of reality, and they're selling you fear. I hope, I guess, that some of you are surprised by those death numbers. You can check behind me. Do your emotions line up with reality? Were you surprised to hear how few people die of this disease? If so, start disobeying. Take your mask off. Take it off. Don't wear masks in your car by yourself. Stop wearing them outside. Stop wearing them at home. Stop wearing them in stores. Yes, I understand that if some stores say that they will not let you in without a mask, they can make those rules. I understand that. You've got to push back. Authoritarians never give up power voluntarily. We know this. You know this. Even if you're one of the scared people, you're being duped. Take your mask off, breathe the fresh air, hug a friend. I'll see you next time. There's no telling how long platforms like YouTube will let us continue this conversation. But lucky for us, there are other options. The Disaffected Podcast can also be found on Spotify, iTunes, Rumble, and now Patreon. Please subscribe. And if you do subscribe on YouTube, hit that notification bell and stay with us in real time as we take a new deep dive every week and examine how to identify and contend with the abuse dynamics at play in the absurd world around us. Do you want to talk back to us? You're in luck. We've got a listener line. Call 202-979-2480. Let us know what you think about the show, whether you agree, disagree, or maybe you want to talk to us during a call-in episode coming up. Once again, 202-979-2480. And remember, we do reserve the right to play voicemail messages on the air. Thanks.